Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson. Thanks for joining us. Fred and I were just talking about a subject of what the customer perception is of a product and how important that is in terms of your business and the consumer perceiving what makes for a good product. Just an interesting conversation we were just starting to have.
Yeah, and you know, Carl, I mentioned that, and it really comes from a startup I was just starting to talk to and work with, is they recognize that they only get one chance to set that their product is durable, that it's reliable. And one of the senior engineers or directors running the team recognizes that you have to design it in. And so I thought, okay, that's why they're talking to me. That makes sense. It's not a disaster. I've had that happen a few times. But when it's important for your particular product, and it is for many, many products, you got to get it right. And but before we get into too much more detail on that, let's pause for a quick message that we tend to run at this point, and then we'll be right back.
Hi, it's Fred here. Just a quick note on improving your reliability engineering professional development. Join Ascendo Reliability and opt into the weekly update email list. You'll receive a weekly rundown of all the new content added to the Ascendo Reliability site. Click through the items of interest, including articles, podcasts, webinars, and more. Quick, easy, smart. Join Ascendo Reliability at ascendoreliability.com/go/membership.
All right. So, Carl, you know, in this concept of brand loyalty or brand perception is much, much bigger than what this podcast is all about. We're not marketeers in the least. So I don't, but I'm sure I've run into this where the product's purchasing decision by a customer is based on its perception and its actual performance, which forms that perception of its reliability.
Yeah, very much so. I'm thinking back to my GM years, and back in the 80s, we would talk a lot about why is it that some of the Japanese vehicles are starting to pick up steam and to get some of the market share that we had enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And we realized that over time, we realized it took a while that how important the brand of reliability was. Mm-hmm. Toyota and Honda were beginning to capture the brand of reliability. In other words, people looked at it may not be the most exciting car in terms of style, whatever, but it sure is reliable. Those are the types of things you're beginning to hear.
Right.
And they started to capture that. And it took a long, hard slog to win back that brand, which they're still working on. In other words, it's a work in progress. But once you lose the mantle of the go-to for whatever your product line is in terms of reliability and durability, it's not easy to get it back.
That's right. And, you know, in different vehicles, I'm thinking of the Ford Mustang was the classic muscle car, right? It was bought for its styling, for its sound, for its power. I don't know that it was necessarily bought because it was the reliable car or the safest car. And the same for lots of consumer products.
That's a good point. And that's a good point because the Corvette, back in the 80s, mm-hmm. and in the 90s, did not have the best record in terms of reliability, but it sure was the competitor to some of the other high-end sports cars and had a brand of its own. And similarly, you think about, this is a great subject. I mean, think about motorcycles.
Yeah.
And Harley-Davidson has a very loyal base. And that base is more than just reliability and durability.
Right.
It's lifestyle.
It's lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle base.
Right. So it's part of the decision. It's not the only thing. Yet it applies to cameras. It applies to printers. It applies to fencing material. I mean, on and on and on. When a customer or a consumer goes to the store or goes online and has a choice, reliability isn't always the only consideration. And in price is a factor. Availability, can I get it today versus, you know, a month from now? Whether you're in a factory or at home or anywhere, the reliability, durability piece is a factor. And in some products, it's more prevalent than others. And for some people, it's more prevalent than others. But it's one of those things that I'm sure I've told this story before, but when I was working at Hewlett Packard, I was at a store that had our printers in it. And I was overhearing a woman ask the clerk at the store, looking at a shelf full of printers, all these boxes and boxes and boxes of printers, inkjet printers. And she said, so how do I know I want an HP printer and this is the right model I want, but there's four boxes there. Which one should I pick? And the clerk says, well, pick the one that's in the front. That's easiest to pick up. And she said, no, I want the one that's going to last 5 years. That's not going to have any problems. And I had to laugh because the clerk was, you know, even you or I, Carl, given 5 years, we could tell you which of the four is going to work without problem. But standing there in the store looking at a box, right, we have no idea.
Very, very, no idea at all. It's not easy. We were, my wife and I were in the market for last year for a new RV, recreational vehicle. Mm-hmm. And there's no data easily available in the public domain about the long-term reliability of RVs. I finally found a nonprofit organization. I had to subscribe to their database, mm-hmm, that kept over many, many years actual data on reliability of RVs.
Oh, cool.
And I paid into that, and then we found the one that was most reliable that also met our other needs. But the information was not easily available. It took quite some time to track it down. So yeah, it's not easy for the consumer. But I will say this, Fred. I was just thinking as you were talking that if a company can distinguish itself well above the others in terms of reliability, it then becomes a marketing advantage.
That's right.
And it becomes like a selling point. Whereas if you're sort of in the middle like everybody else, then reliability, durability is not a selling point. But if you go well above and people recognize you that's a distinguishing characteristic of your product and they can count on it, then it becomes part of the brand.
That's right. And vice versa, right?
Yes.
If you have recall after recall after recall, you better have other selling points that are attractive to the potential buyer. It can destroy a brand too. If reliability is important for a device or an item or a system and you get recognized as not the reliable option, you might have to discount your pricing just to get people to buy it because the perception, and I've run into this with a medical device company, is their customers that would only buy it if it was bundled with other equipment that they had to buy anyway. So it would be the free add-on, and they would say, well, we'll try it if it's free, or if you give us two of them, because it has some features we like. And they struggled. It took them about 3 years to dig out of that. And with designs that were very reliable versus the competition, and it had to be over the top. And it doesn't always have to be, but if you're digging out of a hole, you got to be so demonstratedly better that it's remarkable. People will talk about it. And so it can go either way, though.
Yeah,
you screw it up, you can destroy it real quick.
I've just to elaborate on that or to support that concept, Fred, is I won't name companies, but I've worked with one company that this is so important to them to avoid that negative media, mm-hmm, exposure. That they put that on their FMEA severity scale.
So that the 2020 yeah. factor. If you're going to be on 60 minutes, that's really a bad thing.
Exactly. And that's, so if you had a particular failure mode or cause that had the opportunity for that negative media,
that's right.
then that is very severe.
Yeah, so it's not a safety thing. Nobody's going to get hurt, but it destroys brands, even if it's not true. And I mean, that's very, very clear. Look at the lithium batteries in laptops, the Dell batteries, or in the Samsung phones. That it didn't take very many of those that caught fire. It was on the order of tens at the most, right, in each case. And they just basically lost it. They couldn't run that model.
And it's so irrecoverable. Once it's visually in the minds of the consumer, and of course, nothing gets visual like a thermal event.
A visual thermal event. There's a whole story behind that terminology.
Yes, it is. And the I'm sorry, I've just lost my train of thought there. I was just going on something. The once you lose it, it's so hard to get back. And here's what I was thinking of, Fred, it's the internet age. It's the age of social media that's made this so different. I teach in my FMEA classes that high severity, including negative media, low occurrence can be very, very high risk. Mm-hmm. And that this gets away from the whole concept of, in the FMEA language, what's called RPN, which has a lot of flaws to it. And one of the big flaws of risk priority number in an FMEA is it does not represent the risk of high severity, low occurrence. And that's what we're talking about here.
Well, you also talk about that if you have a 9 or a 10 on a 10-point scale for severity, you got to deal with it anyway, independent of its occurrence and detection.
Exactly.
Right. So I think you're now putting the social media or negative media as a very high enough severity that you got to address it anyway.
Right.
Yeah. And it's amazing. It's a rare event. I've heard it described as a black swan, you know, largely unforeseen so you have to plan for something that could happen that you don't really anticipate yet is very, very rare. So that makes it hard to anticipate. But anyway, the going back to the customer, right? They're going to see marketing material and brand stuff. They're going to see Yelp reviews and word of mouth at conferences. They're going to see what the marketing people are trying to do to position stuff. They're going to have their own experience, their own hands-on real-life experience and form an opinion based on that. But in aggregate, all of that creates a perception, which is what we led off with. It's that then informs their future decisions and their ability to say, yeah, this is reliable or it's not reliable. And we're going to have to, it's more than just your marketing brochure, I think is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it really is. The because of social media, because of the high propensity for easy access to reviews that the consumer has, you cannot avoid the reality of problems. It's a very different age that we live in now. And so we have to have high reliability in order to get that brand, in order to achieve and maintain the brand, because people will find out about the low occurrence problems.
Yeah. And, you know, lately, at least in my practice, it's been a lot of startups. I think I've talked to and have worked with about a dozen startups over the last couple of years. And more early on, it was, we're almost ready to launch or we just launched and it's not working. We got to fix this. You know, we got to the point where we can finally think about reliability, right? And which was always a teeth gnashing on my part to go, well, you know, should have called me a year ago. And lately though, I've had three different companies call me and say, we're just starting the design cycle of this product, or we've got our version 2, we're going to version 3 of our prototypes. And we're realizing that we, as part of our business proposition, our business model, requires this to be reliable. One, physically just work when it's supposed to work, available. And then second, the conversation is that there's, just as you were alluding to, Carl, is that the social media and the brand perception is so much more difficult to recover from if you don't get it right. And for the least the ones talking to me are recognizing that reliability is a key element or part of that formula to get it right. And so that's been really refreshing lately. And I think that's a manifestation of this, the Yelp review cycle, the 24-hour news cycle thing.
It is refreshing. We've seemed to have moved from the lip service about reliability. I don't mean that.
We'll get to it later. Yeah. Or they don't proactively do things to like, you've run into companies that say, oh, reliability is important. We really, really, really need to do that. Well, are you going to do HALT? Or do you have time? We need to do an FMEA.
No, we don't have time for that.
We only have one sample, but you can't break it. We're going to sell it, you know?
Yes, but right? We got to be reliable.
But we have to be reliable. That's lip service.
Right,
and
exactly.
We've seen that. And I think it's moving away from that. These guys I talked to last week were, their next round is they're going to make 8 prototypes. And 2 of them were for reliability. And they were deliberately, one to go to HALT and the other one to more of a benchtop HALT, see how much they can get out of it that way. More of a software side thing. So they.
And I don't mean to paint a picture too broadly, because a lot of companies had a serious approach to reliability for many years. Mm-hmm. But I'm seeing now it's getting, the serious approach is getting over almost all of industry at this point. And it brings me to a, you know, in this casual conversation we're having, to the importance of a reliability plan, because we've got the attention now of management, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And just like you get one chance at your brand, once you have the attention of management, you get one good chance at helping management achieve that. In other words, getting a good reliability plan is something you need to get right. You're not going to have lots of opportunities if you go about reliability the wrong way and stuff like that. It's going to be hard to then regain the attention of management. And so it brings us to our subject that you and I've talked about in terms of our book on the importance of doing a really good job on reliability planning.
That's true. And it's, you know, when the team is starting to ask about or connect it to the brand promise, and then it's usually a set of questions of like, well, how many failures is too many? And, you know, what is the durability of this? What is the business model? And starting those kinds of discussions leads us into the goal setting, which leads into, well, what decisions do we need to make as we go forward to identify what's wrong, or are we on target, or how good do these elements have to be, and working with vendors, all of those things, then combined with what do we know now and what don't we know, help us then frame a plan where we select the appropriate tools. It never works that you just pick a list of tools. Your famous story, Carl, about use everything in the book and do everything and get thousands of samples. I imagine that didn't much get out of the conference room when you presented it.
No, it didn't. a lot of funny looks.
Yeah, but it's and that's what we've been writing about and looking for feedback and stuff on is, well, and the plan is a contract essentially with the team to say, here's the activities and decisions you need to make. Here's the tasks that we need to accomplish to support those decisions. And here's the milestones and the tracking and the monitoring and metrics and so on. Yet it's, well, which specific things are we going to do? And it's a commitment to that if we do these things that are handpicked to help us make better decisions, we will more likely result in a reliable product for our customers, so that when they're standing in the store and they have 3 boxes in front of them, there's no hesitation. They just know that any of those 3 boxes are going to be fine, and we'll deliver on the brand promise that we want.
Exactly. The when the conversation in management, when management recognizes the need for a high reliability brand, and most of them are, that should be the opportunity for the reliability engineer, the reliability manager to step up and say, I completely agree and support that. We need a plan to get there. And to start the conversation about how you develop a reliability plan and to get the support of management in doing that and executing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably a topic for another discussion, is the balance between, well, how many resources do we have available versus the importance of the business model connected to the reliability performance and the brand promise thing. That's well beyond the 30 seconds or so that we've got left. But you did mention the book that we're working on. And so this is going to be our send off, basically, is that typically I ask you to go over, as a listener, I ask you to go over to reliability.fm and you can find our show notes and a variety of other things. This time I'm going to change it a little bit and ask you to go to ascendoreliability.com/go/REM. And it stands for Reliability Engineering Management, which is the working title for the book Carl and I are working on. And I think we've got, what, 6 chapters posted there now? 5 or 6, I think, out of the 8 or 9 or so, the 10 that we're planning on writing. And it does require you to be a member of Ascendo to view it, and it's free to join Ascendo. But once you have access to the book, you have our current drafts of the chapters that we finished so far. And what we're really interested in is, one, is getting the information out, but two, is getting your feedback. What makes sense? What doesn't make sense? How's it going? And also, it gives us a chance to get your input incorporated into the book. And also, hopefully, whet your appetite so that when it does finally come out, that you'll be one of our first to buy the book. So it's a bit direct in what we're doing, but we're willing to give you access to our drafts as we're going through this, and expressly for your feedback, your insights of what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, what's working, what's not working, and so on. Because people that are listening to the Speaking of Reliability podcast are, in our mind and what we know of you as the audience, is a target audience, or perfect audience, I should say, for the book that we're working on. So we'd love to hear your feedback on that. Again, it's at ascendoreliability.com/go/REM. Is that a fair summary of request?
It's a great request, and I hope a lot of people do that, because we want feedback from people and incorporate that into the book itself.
Yeah, and I think we've gotten, I don't know, over 100 really good comments so far. A few punctuation things, appreciate that, because I don't think that process will ever end. We hope to make it a professional in every aspect of it, but more so the structure and concepts and so on. So we, like Carl says, we really would love to hear from you. So with that, Carl, I think we'll wrap it up right there.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.